Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. A new U.S.-Russian brokered ceasefire continues to largely hold in Syria, with no fatalities reported in the first full 24 hours. Mark Toner is a U.S. spokesman.
So we have seen some reports of sporadic violence, but thus far the arrangement as a whole seems to be holding, and the violence is lower in comparison to previous days and weeks.
Speaking in Geneva Tuesday, the U.N. Special Envoy to Syria, Stefan de Mistura, said a relief convoy is ready to move on to the embattled city of Aleppo, fulfilling another aspect of the deal, delivering aid to besieged civilians.
WFP, which is the main logistical and organization linked to the convoys, is ready with 20 trucks. They are loaded and ready.
If the truce holds for a week, the U.S. and Russia will establish a joint integration command, or JIC, to coordinate airstrikes against jihadist groups not covered by the truce. Lieutenant General Jeffrey Harrigan is commander of the U.S. Air Force's Central Command.
The important key to remember right now is we will continue to do prudent planning with respect to any implementation, but the reality is we have to get through six more days of the Russians and the regime doing the right thing.
It's hoped the deal will last long enough to permit a resumption of talks on the country's political future. For the first time since plunging into chaos in 1991, Somalia hosted a regional summit of African heads of state. The Somali foreign minister said it symbolizes his country's reconstruction. They discussed Somalia's upcoming parliamentary and presidential elections. Amina Mohamed is Kenya's foreign affairs secretary.
It welcomed the federal government of Somalia's commitment to a credible, transparent, inclusive electoral mechanism towards a peaceful and democratic transition.
This is VOA News. Former Israeli President and Prime Minister Shimon Peres is in a medically induced coma after suffering a stroke Tuesday. Dr. Itzhak Kreis directs the Sheba Medical Center.
Mr. Shimon Peres suffered from a major stroke with a component of bleeding. He is now sedated and on a respirator, and we are with a close and continuous contact. An evaluation on his state.
The 93-year-old Peres, hospitalized in January for heart problems. He has served Israel in nearly every major public office, including prime minister, president, and foreign minister, and was joint recipient of the 1994 Nobel Peace Prize. U.S. officials say the U.S. will sign a record 10-year, $38 billion security assistance deal with Israel Wednesday, the largest of its kind ever. The current agreement expires in 2018. Israel had sought more funding. The negotiations took 10 months to complete. The so-called Memorandum of Agreement, which must be approved by Congress, calls for nearly $4 billion in annual aid and for the first time includes a $500 million each year for Israeli missile defense. The UN Tuesday said yellow fever outbreaks in Angola and Democratic Republic of Congo have been brought under control following a mass vaccination campaign. Sylvie Briand heads infectious hazard management for the World Health Organization.
One good news is that these outbreaks are under control now. We haven't had any new cases in Angola since 23rd June and since 12 July in DRC.
She cautioned further outbreaks in more than 30 countries in Africa cannot be ruled out, including parts of Congo that had not been vaccinated recently. The entire population of the Congolese capital, Kinshasa, was vaccinated in 10 days. Three Ukrainian soldiers were killed Tuesday in fighting with pro-Russian separatist fighters in eastern Ukraine ahead of a new peace effort by Germany and France. A truce went into effect September 1st that appeared to generally hold until a recent uptick in fighting. German and French foreign ministers hope to shore up the truce and pave the way for a political process to end 29 months of conflict. President Obama Wednesday hosts Myanmar State Councilor and de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi, whose primary mission is expected to be an easing of sanctions imposed during military rule. It's her first visit since her National League for Democracy won elections in November. U.S. Democratic Party presidential nominee Hillary Clinton expected to resume campaigning Thursday after recovering from what her doctors call a bout of pneumonia. President Obama campaigned in her stead Tuesday in Philadelphia. Clinton canceled events after being helped into a vehicle after falling ill Sunday during a 15th anniversary observance of the September 11, 2001 terrorist attack in New York. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today's Wednesday, September 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya's president hailed Somalia's peace and stability as IGAD leaders conclude a historic one-day summit in Mogadishu.
The fact that a summit of this nature can be held here in Mogadishu is a clear sign of the progress the government and the people of Somalia have made towards establishing peace and stability.
That's Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta speaking Tuesday in the Somali capital, Mogadishu. Meanwhile, Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed welcomes Kenya's support for Somali security. South Sudan's government dismisses the findings of a report by a Washington-based advocacy group. And Zambia's president calls for unity at his inauguration following a bitterly fought campaign.
It is our duty as citizens of Mother Zambia to acknowledge that we are in this journey together, as guided by our national motto of One Zambia, One Nation.
The Zambian President Edgar Lungu speaking yesterday at his inauguration for his first full five-year term. Zimbabwe's president praises Zambia's role of assisting liberation movements in Africa, and South Africa denies a visa to a U.S. anti-gay preacher. The stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The leaders of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, known as IGAD, on Tuesday concluded a historic summit in the Somali capital, Mogadishu. Uganda, Ethiopia, and Kenya provide the bulk of the troops to the African Union mission in Somalia, known as AMISOM, that is fighting against Al-Shabaab. In their communique, the leaders call for AMISOM troops and Somali security forces to expand their operations to deal with the revolving Al-Shabaab terror threat and immediately recover the remaining areas controlled by Al-Shabaab and to secure Somalia's upcoming 2016 presidential election. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta said having the IGAD summit for the first time in Mogadishu was a clear sign of the solidarity that the region wishes to express with the government and people of Somalia.
The fact that a summit of this nature can be held here in Mogadishu is a clear sign of the progress the government and the people of Somalia have made towards establishing peace and stability not only here in Mogadishu, but in Somalia, that despite the challenges, we are moving and heading in the right direction. And ours is to continue to assure our brothers and sisters in Somalia, our neighbors, that Kenya stands in solidarity with you, that we shall work together to ensure peace, security, and stability, because the long-term wish is for us to be able to be here, not to discuss issues of security, but rather to discuss issues of economic cooperation, trade that will bring prosperity to the peoples of our two countries. Ours is just to encourage the people of Somalia, indeed as you head towards your elections, that these elections should be peaceful, these elections should bear the will of the people of Somalia, and for you to know that you can count on our brothers and sisters.
Mr. Kenyatta praised Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud for the progress he has made in making Somalia peaceful. The Kenyan leader said Africa and the world should stand together to defeat terrorism.
Mine really is to encourage the Somali diaspora from across the world to really come back and be part of building the new Somalia. Somalia is becoming peaceful. Mogadishu is peaceful. Terrorism is a factor that faces all of us, be we in Mogadishu, in Nairobi, in Paris, in Brussels, but we must have the confidence to be able to look to the future and the confidence to know that we shall ultimately win our fight against these small elements who seek to create division and destruction across the world. So mine is to encourage people, foreign investors, development partners, let us support this government, let us support the people of Somalia, let us support them in their efforts to rebuild what was once a great country.
That's Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta speaking Tuesday in the Somali capital Mogadishu at the conclusion of a historic IGAD summit. For his part, Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud said he and the Kenyan president discussed economic cooperation, Somali refugees and security in the region.
These two countries are neighbors, and we can only have one option, which is to work together towards the betterment of the life of the people. It's not only the subjects, but institutionalizing the economic cooperation between the two countries. We've discussed it deliberately on the subject of the cross-border trade. Similarly, supporting Somalia in developing institutions that are capable of dealing with the rest of the world. Somalia and Kenya has been good neighbors for a long time and will remain. President Uhuru Kenyatta has been playing a leading position in supporting Somalia, whether it's the refugee issues, whether it's accommodating Somali people inside Kenya. And the final remaining points have been discussed about the Wajir issue, which most of the Somali people have concerns on it. I'm very much grateful that the Republic of Kenya has understood our concerns, and the minister said will soon address those concerns in the best interest of both countries. Security is always a very important issue that concerns both our mutual interest, and we will remain seized in fulfilling the security.
The Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud speaking Tuesday at the conclusion of a historic IGAD summit in the Somali capital, Mogadishu. A spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir has dismissed the findings of a new report by the Washington-based advocacy group The Enough Project, which accuses President Kiir and former First Vice President Riek Machar of amassing huge wealth as most South Sudanese go hungry. Spokesman Aten Wek Aten calls the report baseless. Also, Machar's spokesman says his boss has no property outside the country as alleged by the report. Michael Atit of VOA South Sudan in Focus program has more from Juba.
The report released by the Sentry is an initiative of the Enough Project, Not On Our Watch, a non-profit base in Washington and Center for Advanced Defense. The findings of the report mention names of the families and top associates of President Kiir and former Vice President Riek Machar, who own multi-million dollar properties, drive luxurious cars, and stay at expensive hotels as a majority of South Sudanese suffer. President Kiir's spokesman Ateng Wek Ateng calls the Sentry report's, quote, rubbish and a lie. Ateng says the report is meant to implicate President Salva Kiir's leadership.
The Sentry report is a political report because it contains a lot of nonsensical conclusions about the corruption in South Sudan. And it can only be used as a recipe for regime change, for those who are running behind to change the regime, because the report looked like it is designed to confuse the people of South Sudan and even to make people of South Sudan incapable of even knowing who has really squandered their money.
The presidential spokesman says the report is designed to tarnish what he calls the good image of President Kiir and his army generals. Ateng denies allegation in the report that Mr. Kiir and some of his top generals, including SPLA Chief of Staff Paul Malong, used the conflict to make money. Ateng also rubbished the allegations that President Kiir also uses state resources to provide luxurious life for his family members. Ateng says Mr. Kiir's legal advisors are examining the report.
The office of the president has now given the report to the legal teams who will be studying it, and they will advise accordingly. And most probably, they will advise for a legal challenge to the report. We will hire a legal firm in the United States of America to pursue this in a court of law.
The report, based on the two-year investigation, also says former Vice President Machar owns luxury house in Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa and the Kenyan capital Nairobi. James Gadet is Machar's spokesman. He says Machar neither owns a house in Nairobi nor Addis Ababa.
He was accommodated during the peace talks by the authorities in Ethiopia. So he does not own that house. For the report to come out and implicate him about that particular house in Addis is not true, because it is not his property. He has not bought it. He was simply accommodated.
Gaded admits that the former vice president was renting a luxury house in Nairobi.
His family should not be expected to rent a house in a slum area in Nairobi, because the family of vice president should live in a decent place, a secure place. And this is what happened in Nairobi.
Gaded says Machar's family have moved out the Nairobi house, whose picture appeared in the report, because, he says, Mr. Machar has no money to pay for its rent. Gaded, however, praised the Enough Project for releasing the report. He says the findings in the report can be used against individuals who have committed crimes against the nation. The report is the first of its kind that appears to draw a direct connection between public corruption and the ongoing armed conflict in the country. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Today's Wednesday, September 14th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Zambian President Edgar Lungu was yesterday inaugurated to his first full five-year term after winning a bitterly contested August 11 election, which was marred by violence. The opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, which came second in the election, boycotted the ceremonies after its petition challenging the election results was rejected last week by the Constitutional Court. In his inaugural speech, President Lungu called for Zambians to unite and promised to be the president for all Zambians.
We know that elections, like any other competitive enterprise, have the ability to bring out the most selfish aspects of our humanity. Countrymen and women, when the election season is over, there should be no winners and losers, but we all must take away with us the valuable lessons from the elections. On my part, I have learned that there is no time and latitude to settle scores. Let us seize the opportunity to rise above the different points of view that divided us during the campaigns.
Zambian President Edgar Lungu speaking yesterday at his inauguration to his first full five-year term. Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe, who attended the inauguration of President Lungu, praised the conduct of the election, saying it was free and fair.
It is our duty as citizens of Mother Zambia to acknowledge that we are on this journey together, as guided by our national motto of one Zambia, one nation. My dear friends,
President Mugabe praised Zambia's founding president, Kenneth Kaunda, and praised the country's historic of assisting liberation movements in the Southern African nation.
I want to thank in a very particular way to our great leader and the founder of the Zambian nation, who together with others like Nyerere, Kwame Nkrumah, Seretse Khama, founded the frontline states, which also created an environment and gave us circumstances as well as lots of assistance in Zimbabwe, in Namibia, in South Africa, and later in Angola, so we could become free.
That's Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe speaking yesterday in Lusaka at the inauguration of Zambian President Edgar Lungu. South Africa's immigration minister has denied a visa to an American church leader known for his anti-gay views. More than 60,000 South Africans had signed a petition asking the government to keep Stephen Anderson out of the country. VOA's Anita Powell has more from Johannesburg.
Faithful Word Baptist Church founder Stephen Anderson had been planning what he called a soul-winning marathon later this month in Southern Africa. But Tuesday, South African Home Affairs Minister Malusi Gigaba denied Anderson entry, citing the country's strong legal protections of equality and non-discrimination. South Africa's constitution specifically excludes hate speech from its free speech protections.
Stephen Anderson and members and or associates of his church are prohibited from entering the Republic of South Africa. Furthermore, I have withdrawn their visa exemption status enjoyed by all Americans. This is on the basis that I am certain they promote hate speech as well as advocate social violence. Accordingly, Stephen Anderson will be advised that he is a prohibited person in South Africa.
Anderson has quoted the Bible to justify genocide against gays and lesbians. He has repeatedly insulted Islam and the Quran, and he publicly rejoiced after the June mass shooting at a gay club in Orlando, Florida, saying he thought the 53 victims deserved death. Anderson says South Africa's religious freedom laws should allow him to visit South Africa and spread his views. He also denied he planned to focus on his anti-gay views at his events in South Africa, and said he would instead talk about evangelism and scripture. In a Facebook message posted Tuesday, Anderson said he still plans to visit Botswana later this month, but it is unclear how he will get to the Southern African nation without being able to go through South Africa or through the United Kingdom, which he says has also banned him. Human Rights Watch senior Africa researcher Dewa Mavinga says he hopes South Africa's government action will set an example.
The position and action taken by Minister Gigaba is exemplary in that it is going against that trend where we have seen a backlash not only from these fundamentalist pastors but also from senior government officials, such as in Zimbabwe, for example. But what we see now is that in terms of constitutional rights, the right to non-discrimination should be sufficient to protect, the LGBTI community.
Gigaba says the door to South Africa is not permanently closed. If Anderson wants to come in, he says, he can. But first, he must renounce his views and repent. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
After Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton stumbled as she was getting into a car last weekend, the world started talking about pneumonia. She has been diagnosed with pneumonia and is being treated with antibiotics. The issue brings up questions about Clinton's health and about the seriousness of pneumonia itself. VOA's Carol Pearson as an expert to answer a few questions about the disease.
Pneumonia is a common and sometimes lethal lung infection. Dr. Matthew Schreiber specializes in lung disease at MedStar Washington Hospital.
It can happen from any number of organisms, bacterial pneumonia or viral pneumonia.
Hillary Clinton's doctor confirmed the diagnosis of pneumonia and prescribed antibiotics that are only used for bacterial pneumonia.
Bacterial pneumonia, we have more options to treat. So in some ways, you could make an argument that it's our advantage when it's a bacterial pneumonia. Viral pneumonia, you've all heard of the flu. The flu is an incredibly common infectious process that causes a pneumonia. And truth be told, we don't have many options on how to treat that.
Bed rest, fluids, and medication to lower a fever are recommended for any type of pneumonia. Pneumonia is the leading cause of death worldwide for children under the age of 5, according to the World Health Organization. In the U.S., it sends about 1 million adults to the hospital every year.
The severity of it really depends on how that infection has influenced that person's lungs and how that person's body is reacting to it.
People who already have a lung disease have a greater risk for developing a serious case of pneumonia, and older adults are more at risk than younger adults. Pneumonia is contagious. When people sneeze, they send air droplets of bacteria or viruses that others can breathe in. There are vaccines that can prevent some types of bacterial pneumonia. So can hand washing. But Dr. Schreiber says anyone can get it.
There's no vitamin or pill that you can take to prevent it, and you want to have yourself in the best physical state to handle an infection if it comes up. So being active, staying healthy, eating well are all good measures to give your body a reserve to handle an infection.
Common symptoms include cough, fever, feeling tired, and chest pain that gets worse when coughing. Schreiber says the best way to prevent pneumonia from becoming serious is to see a doctor when the symptoms first appear. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
The Alzheimer's Association calls Alzheimer's the only disease among the top 10 causes of death in America that cannot be prevented, cured, or even slowed. This gloomy outlook means many people avoid screening tests for dementia. Now, a U.S. scientist has documented reversal of early Alzheimer's in a small case study, largely through lifestyle interventions. Some activists with a high genetic risk for Alzheimer's say the study bolsters their efforts to speak openly about ways to foster healthy brains. From Boulder, Colorado, Shelley Schlender reports.
These friends have gathered from around the world to have fun and to be serious about salads and exercise. That's because they want to reduce their risk for a brain-destroying disease known as Alzheimer's.
We all found out that we carried one or two copies of the APOE4 gene, which puts us at higher risk for Alzheimer's.
Susan, who offers only her first name, says her father died from Alzheimer's. During his decline, doctors had little to offer except a memory-boosting drug called Aricept.
It was just more or less, well, we could try Aricept, but it won't work for very long. And there's a fatalistic attitude with some doctors that once you have it, there's nothing you can do, and you just sort of have to get your affairs in order and expect that you're going to the nursing home next.
Susan discovered she has the APOE4 genetic trait 4 years ago. Determined not to do nothing, she went online and sought other people with her genotype.
A bunch of us banded together and decided to see, can we hack our own health?
One of those hackers is Julie G. Before teaming up with Susan, Julie G had been anxiously monitoring her increasing senior moments at the not-so-senior age of 49. Then she learned that she has the APOE4 genetic trait.
When I put the symptoms I was having together with my very high risk of developing Alzheimer's disease, I was pretty terrified.
Her fear turned to courage as she helped build an online community named APOE4.info. The health hackers dug into the conflicting studies about healthy brains, then focused in on leafy greens, healthy fats, exercise, and more.
It's been a very exciting journey. My cognition is very much improved now.
Her group's approach is validated by the work of Dale Bredesen of the Buck Institute for Research on Aging. He studies how combining lifestyle changes with other interventions can reverse cognitive decline and has conferred with the APOE4.info group for 2 years. In June, Bredesen added to their optimism when he documented memory improvements for even early Alzheimer's.
This is the first time in history that there's been reversal of cognitive decline in early Alzheimer's disease.
Bredesen calls the APOE4.info group a great example of people who walk the talk, using a variety of ways to help the brain, such as rigorous exercise, good nutrition, and more. For VOA News, I'm Shelley Schlender in Boulder.
Briefly before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The UN's top diplomat in Libya has warned that the oil-rich country's economy is on the road to collapse. Martin Kobler, head of the UN support mission in Libya, told the UN Security Council on Tuesday that oil production is at its lowest, with only about 200,000 barrels per day compared with 1.4 million barrels after the 2011 revolution that ousted former dictator Muammar Gaddafi. And that is it for this Wednesday, September 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporter Peter Clotty and Ricky Schreier, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC, GMT, right here on VOA Africa.
Next on Straight Talk Africa,
an in-depth one-on-one conversation with Namibian president. The wide-ranging discussion will include the president's vision for the future of the Southern African nation. That's next, right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.